I'm now recording.
Now this is for posterity, not just your ears.
Yep.
Excellent. This is really fun.
Good. I'm glad we're recording again.
Me too. It feels like too long. I'm really excited about season 7.
Season 7 is going to be rad.
Mm-hmm.
Contact us at pgttcm@gmail.com or join the discussion on Facebook or Twitter. Please do, we love input. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe to PGTTCM on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts. Donate to patreon.com/pgttcm and get something cool each month or something. We need to work on Patreon.
Yeah, we do.
People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by BunnySlippers.com and FoundItemClothing.com. Keep your feet warm this winter with some Cthulhu slippers from BunnySlippers.com. Get your favorite shirt from your favorite cult films from FoundItemClothing.com. Greetings, listeners. It is I, Sarah Fee, here to talk to you once again about the Cthulhu Mythos. Its books, its monsters, its unfortunate human casualties, its timeline in general, and even its tangential bits. Like the dreamlands or things of a weird nature or things that are Lovecraftian leaning. Once more we head into those dark woods. Once again we walk down the lightless stone staircase in the middle of nowhere.
Hey, welcome to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos, Series 7.
Series 7, I'm so excited.
Me too.
This is going to be great.
Me too. This is our series opener. This isn't like episode one or anything. Mm-hmm. This is just kind of a refresher and as...
Oh, like a reset. Sort of like a, you know, listen to this and then you'll know where we are.
Yeah.
Kind of like a road, a road marker.
Yeah. Yeah. This isn't a complete, like, from the beginning of the cosmos up into the, mid-19th century. But this is more like kind of... just like late 16th century to late 19th century recap. Also, what is the Cthulhu mythos? Not what is the Cthulhu mythos, what is Lovecraftian horror?
Yes, what is Lovecraftian horror? And how is it different from other horror? And why do we love it?
So. Is it the same thing as gothic horror? Not quite.
No, is it the same thing as romantic horror?
Not quite.
Is it the same thing as slasher fiction?
No.
Definitely not.
Certainly not the same thing as slash fiction.
Slash fiction. Man, twincest. Okay, anyway, The point is.
So, we're going to be talking about that today.
Yes.
And, let's see, in the break... Let's see, we've listened to some Arthur Macken.
Uh-huh.
And in the break, have you done anything fun and exciting?
Well, Valentine's Day happened.
Ooh.
So, no.
Okay, all right. I made donuts on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. They were pretty donuts. I like the heart on all of the s'mores donuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I hand drew hearts and caramel sauce on donuts. Yeah.
Fancy. And said it tasted really good.
Something else that happened was my birthday, and my awesome co-host made me a super rad cake. And actually, since I'm allergic to like so many things, had to resort to using a cake. Nope. You tell them.
Oh, yeah. So, well, DB is allergic to like half the things you would normally put in a cake, including flour, eggs, and butter, so and milk. So I had to find a recipe that would, and I like looked, of course, at paleo recipes, but they all had eggs in them, and I looked at vegan recipes, but they all had like, you know, flour in them, and I looked at like flourless, but a lot of that is like, well, then you melt chocolate and butter together, and then blah blah blah, and I'm like, okay. But eventually I found a recipe that was really good, and it was from the Depression era when people did not have things like butter and eggs. And it did call for flour because it is a cake, but I used a really good sub 1-1 gluten-free flour from Bob's Red Mill.
cool.
Yeah, and it's a really good flour, actually. Good All replacer. Right. Anyway.
For some reason, I thought the cake was World War II era. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like ration.
It is also that. Like, Depression era, World War II ration era. You need to bake a cake, but we have nothing.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's nice about using an old recipe like that, rather than something that's been, like, baked up because somebody has an idea that they shouldn't be eating, you know, a lot of our modern foods, is that it's been road tested a lot, you know? It wouldn't be around still if people didn't like it.
Just like how Prohibition era wine recipes are still popular within our prison system in America.
I suppose that's true, yes. I wonder if this cake recipe is popular there as well.
Who knows?
Oh, jeez.
All right, let's get on with the show.
On with the show. What is Lovecraftian horror? Horror based on nihilistic philosophy and racist theosophy, mixed with many elements from gothic and romantic horror, named after American author H.P. Lovecraft from 1890 to 1937. Lovecraft based the style and structure of his horror on classic horror writers like Blackwood, Lord Dunsany, and Poe, except instead of ghosts, he had aliens. Much of Lovecraft's work, like other authors, varies as the years go on. Early on, his writing was very much gothic romantic horror, then over the years transmogrifies into horror of science, occultism, theosophy, and a love for the antique, while including modern settings and science for the horror of the scientific contrast from the antique.
Yeah, the juxtaposition.
Thank you. The juxtaposition.
Modern scientific and the antique.
Exactly.
Or antiquity.
Do you want to talk about what theosophy is real quick?
Theosophy is
Spurious?
The spiritualist movement.
The spiritualist movement.
Madame Heloise Bavlovsky.
Basically the idea that there might be a philosophy behind spiritualism?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Another aspect of Lovecraftian horror is that it is an open source horror. As Lovecraft mentored and or was friends with several other writers who also used aspects of Lovecraft's horror, while others copy the style outright. Writers such as Stephen King, Robert Bloch, and Ramsey Campbell started out writing Lovecraftian horror. Like Bloch, Robert E. Howard and Clark Ashton Smith were contemporary writers with and friends of Lovecraft, sharing elements and concepts. But Lovecraftian horror differs from Clark Ashton Smith's romantic horror and Robert E. Howard's pugilistic, mainly violent stories. However, both Smith and Howard did write wonderful semi-Lovecraftian stories set in pre-human times with warriors and wizards, eldritch gods, and ancient monsters. Lovecraftian horror is wrapped in a love of rural New England and a fear of the city, filled with references to modern and classic art movements, classic and esoteric literature references. Fear in it comes from unseen and unknowable corners of the cosmos. There is no God. Humanity is an accident and a speck in the universe. What really makes a story, Lovecraftian horror, are the five commonalities.
1. Antiquarian Anglophile.
Lovecraft wrote like he was in the 18th century and British sometimes. Unfortunately, this is copied by writers of the genre. Technology fails, distant locations, far from help or humanity.
Madness.
Seeing terrible things that drive one insane. Knowing a truth that drives one mad.
Misanthropy.
Humans are a cosmic speck. There is no caring God.
Texture.
Things get really slimy. No blood, no human gore, just gross alien effluent. Look.
The Cthulhu mythos is really kind of held up, like one aspect that kind of holds up the Cthulhu mythos is propped up on is this like theosophy at the time of like Madame Bavlovsky, of like older ages of man, like pre-human cultures that existed that were
pre-human, so like not of humans but thinking races that came before humans?
Yes. Like the first race to inhabit Earth was like, I think, Gaseous or something like that. And then the next race was like the Atlanteans. And this is where the stuff about people, the Semitic tribes coming from like a degenerate mud race of the Atlanteans and stuff like
okay.
that. This is where this garbage comes from.
Okay.
Is Matta Bavlovsky.
So wait. So the idea is that the Atlanteans weren't humans, they were some other species.
Yes. And like what branched off of them was like the Aryans or something like that. I could be totally off.
You mean
this is
the Aryans being the like Norse-ish god people that people were all like wooey about before.
Yeah, that,
the little
the
gray
who
aliens
supposedly created all
came
the
around.
Art and everything. And
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, this is where that this bullshit comes from.
Some real bullshit.
Yeah. Anyway, so and I think like humans are supposed to be like the third or fourth age and what you know, we're trying to achieve is like creatures of pure energy.
You mean like that's where humans are supposed to be headed?
Yeah.
I mean, let me
From
tell
gas
you this.
To pure energy.
I mean, okay, so let's just for just a minute.
Yeah.
Let's get off
sure.
subject just for a minute.
A little bit.
Becoming a creature of pure energy. Okay, so like when a human dies. If our spirit is, our consciousness or whatever, is separate from our body, if it's not just electrical impulses inside of our brain giving us grand illusions,
sure.
then we all become a creature of pure energy when we die.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. That sounds like a bunch of Christian-ish bunk to me.
Yeah.
I.e., no offense. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
But, i.e., people who think that this physical plane, this world that we're in right now, is not important because there's a larger goal. What a way to ruin a world, I have to say.
Yep.
Enjoy but, where you are.
But it did lead to some science fiction and fantasy.
Oh, sure. I mean, stories are fun. Let's think about whatever we want.
Yeah.
But beliefs...
I mean, I'm pretty sure Lovecraft and those guys are like, what a bunch of garbage. But you know what? It'd be fun to set a story during those times of those Atlantean people. Okay, so Lovecraftian horror, it's its own thing. And those are the things that makes it its own thing. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of like they just kind of, or it's kind of like people who write Lovecraftian horror, kind of just kind of like, in the beginning at least, swap out things like ghosts for aliens and haunted houses for, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, like, in Lovecraft, instead of it being the, like, leftover spirits of humans that are haunting us, it is these leftover of ancient beings.
Yeah.
These, like, like, for instance, Cthulhu himself is not awake, but his dreams that drive us crazy.
Yeah, and it's not the it's not the alien race that inhabits the Antarctic
uh-huh.
that takes out a bunch of scientists from Miskatonic University. It's one of their creations and the leftovers of their degenerate race. And, you know, I mean, that's Lovecraft.
I mean, like, this idea that races are going to, quote, degenerate is,
yeah,
like, really, really
it's
gross.
It's really gross.
I mean, I don't know.
I wonder if Lovecraft thinks that that's what happened to the dinosaurs.
Oh, the degenerate.
They degenerated.
Did they become a lot of dilettantes? To just laze around all day, too lazy to get a meal?
Yeah.
They're all like...
all those foreign dinosaurs.
Oh man, what were they, too heterogeneous?
Those shifty foreign dinosaurs, unaware of the local customs.
Oh man, they picked on the wrong dinosaur wizard, huh?
Oh yeah.
Well, geez. Okay. All right. So, for a recap about where we are in the mythos and what we're going to be talking about in season 7, right?
Well, this list is a combination of things that we have talked about for
mm-hmm.
sure
mm-hmm.
and things that we're going to be talking about for sure.
Mm.
And we're going to be where we left off with season 6, what we covered in season 6, but also some stuff that we're going to be covering in season 7.
Interesting. I really appreciate the way that the Mythos timeline that you have aggregated here, like, it follows and intertwines with real history.
Yes.
It's interesting to see the way that people write historical fiction.
Oh, yeah.
I love that aspect. And even a lot of what we're reading, of course, is historical fiction.
Sure,
it was
sure.
written in our history about our about their history or our combined history.
And one thing about Lovecraftian horror, much like Gothic horror, mm-hmm. is the fact that it tries to bring an element of reality into it. And a lot of the times that's mixing things with historic things that did happen.
Yeah.
Or newspaper clippings that... You know, like, oh, this great flood that happened up in Vermont. Well,
yeah.
at the same time that that happened, well, these lobster monsters walked up on the shore.
This is part of the, like, the whole Lovecraftian horror thing is that it's like, oh, you think you know something, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but actually there's a lair, and then you find out, and then you must go mad because the knowledge, etc.
And there's a sense of familiarity to mm-hmm. some things because the fact that, like, Lovecraft was looking at, like, popular science and then, like, writing about something that he read in a science journal. So your readers of, like, amazing stories or weird tales
uh-huh.
probably possibly also read these science regs and would read that and then read that and be like, wait a minute. He talks about the discovery of Pluto in that, and I'm reading about it in this.
Oh.
Wait a minute, is the Necronomicon a real thing?
Is it a real thing?
And people actually would write them, write these authors about finding out more about the Necronomicon, and,
wow.
you know, like, people be like, where can I get my copy?
Go to Miskatonic University. Check it out from the library. But be careful, you're going to get a call from the librarian.
Bibliothèque Nationale in France, mm-hmm. and also... The University of Buenos Aires has one in their restricted library.
Really?
Yes.
Is there really, I mean, in real life, is
no.
there a University of Buenos Aires?
Oh, I have no idea about
Me
that.
Either.
I was going to be like, there is no Necronomicon.
No, of
but
course
you know
not.
That. You
yeah.
know that. You're not.
Hey, everyone. This is DB Spitzer here. Would you like to help support the show? Have something cool to wear? You know, there's bunnyslippers.com, there's foundadamclothing.com. But what about PGTTCM's own store? Check out our new store at pgttcm.threadless.com. You'll find our new logo, and in the upcoming months we're going to have a t-shirt club where you can get a t-shirt that's only going to last for a month, and then it's going to be gone. They're going to be Mythos related, none of my weird robots or dinosaur stuff, none of my spooky presidents things, or other side projects that I've been working on. This is going to be cool Mythos t-shirts. So check out threadless.com, well, pgttcm.threadless.com, in the upcoming months and see what kind of cool stuff we got going on. All right. Thank you so much. Listen to back the show.
So where we're at in the Mythos timeline right now is the late 17th century, the town of Arkham is founded in Massachusetts. 1678, Martin's Shipyard begins building ships for Innsmouth's growing fishing and trade industry. 1692, in March, a witch hysteria engulfs Salem, Massachusetts. The danger drives Joseph Kerwin to move to Providence, Rhode Island. Others, a group of believers including Whatley and Bishop families, move to north central Massachusetts. There they found the town of New Dunwich. Soon after, the witch panic begins in Salem, it spreads to Arkham. As a result, they send one witch, Keziah Mason, to Salem for trial. However, Mason disappears from her cell before she can be executed. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Setting up dreams of the witch house. At 1710, Jerusalem's Lot, a religious community, is founded on the coast of Massachusetts. The people are members of a splinter Puritan group led by the charismatic James Boone. They follow Boone's unorthodox doctrines, and the town's inhabitants are soon quite decadent and deranged. 1713, Joseph Kerwin donates funds to help rebuild the Great Bridge in Providence. 1716, the wizard Sir Gilbert Morley purchases the Norman castle where Biatus has been chained and begins giving sacrifices to the creature in exchange for communicating with the other great old ones. Mid-18th century, Arkham becomes a thriving seaport. One of the more influential sea captains,
Jeremiah Orne donates the books and funds that lead to the foundation of the Miskatonic Liberal College. Richard Billington constructs a stone circle in the woods near Dunwich and engages in apparently dark rites there. After a year or so, Billington disappears, said by a local American Indian tribe to have fallen prey to an entity he had summoned. Between 1726 and 1760, during the reign of King George II of England, Sebastian Arkham is granted by royal decree the parcel of formerly Native American land upon which he plans to build his home. However, he encounters resistance from the natives, who consider the mountain centerpiece of his land sacred and refuse to leave. 1728, many flee to Castronegro from the persecution of the Masons in Madrid. 1737. According to some, Cultes de Ghouls by the Comte de Halle is published in Rouen, France. 1738. The famous wit, Dr. Checkley, calls on Joseph Kerwin at his home and leaves in a very disturbed state. 1746. Benvenuto Chettibor di Gheri, later to be a gifted young composer, is born in Rome. John Merritt, an elderly and learned Englishman, visits Joseph Kerwin. After seeing Kerwin's farmhouse library, Merritt wants no more to do with him. 1747, the Congregational Church is completed. Reverend Abijah Hoadley, preaches against the rumblings in the hills around Dunwich, decrying them as the work of the devil. Soon after, Hoadley disappears and the congregation drifts apart. Do you think that's the church that is described as being like the main mercantile thing in Dunwich?
Later on? That's the deserted church, I imagine.
I see. Okay, 1748, Sir Gilbert Morley seals Biatus's prison one final time and soon disappears. He leaves his diary behind, but his castle home is torn down. 1758, March and April. Two regiments of royal soldiers pass through Providence. While they are stopped there, a few of their troops disappear without a trace. Joseph Kerwin is suspected to be involved because he is suspicious. 1763, March 7th, Joseph Kerwin marries Eliza Tillinghast. May 7th, Joseph and Eliza Kerwin's daughter Anne is born. Oh, they had to get married, did they? Because that's like 2 months. Okay. 1770, it becomes obvious to many important figures in Providence that Joseph Kerwin is involved in some kind of illegal acts. 1771, April 12th, a raid is initiated on Joseph Kerwin's Pawtucket Farm. In the aftermath, Kerwin is never seen again. Kerwin's copy of the Necronomicon, unique in having the title Qanun e Islam on its cover, is spirited away. I wonder what that means.
I don't know.
1772, a now widowed Eliza Kerwin changes her last name and that of her daughter back to Tillinghast. She donates what remains of Joseph Kerwin's books to the future Miskatonic University. 1781, an ancestor, Randolph Carter, disappears mysteriously from a grove of trees near the Carter property near Arkham. 1783, soon after the end of the Revolutionary War, Miskatonic is presented the former Arkham Town Common in recognition of its achievements. 1783, the pamphlet on the sending out of the soul circulates to the Salem occult community. 1785, Welcome Potter, great-great-grandfather of Charles Dexter Ward, marries Anne Tillinghast, daughter of Joseph Kerwin. Around Candlemas, a good wife, Doton of Duxbury, encounters a horrible creature with the face of Robert Billington. Oh no! The creature is captured by locals. Circa 1790, the Severn Ford Island witch cult is disbanded. Individuals continue to visit the island through the next 2 centuries, some of which are prey to bizarre attacks. The island becomes a center of strange events. A group of people come to the lake containing Galaki's meteor from nearby Goatswold. Led by Thomas Lee, the cult builds houses there so they can be near their god. Circa 1793, the Agidag de Erlitz flee France and settle in Bavaria at the time of the French Revolution. They change the family name to Derleth.
It's factual, though.
Do you want me
it's
to?
It's a factual joke.
Oh, okay. So this really happened to Agidag Erlitz,
yeah,
de Erlitz family.
Erlitz.
Okay.
Moved to Bavaria and changed the name
to Derleth.
Yeah.
To blend in better with the Bavarians.
Yeah, with the Bavarian-faced Bavarians.
1793, Juan Gonzalez, a Spanish explorer, visits the Temple of the Toad in the jungles of Honduras. A boy enters an abandoned house near an Arkham burying ground and sees something there so terrifying that it drives him mad. Sorry, drives him mad. 1795, Frederick von Huntz is Huntz. Frederick von Huntz is born in Cologne, Germany.
You know what it was called before it was called Cologne?
Cologne?
Aftershaven.
1797, Obadiah Marsh, ancestor of Obed Marsh, is found in a rowboat in Innsmouth Harbor with his first mate, Cyrus Phillips. He claims that his ship and the rest of his crew were lost in the South Pacific to some very horny, weird creatures. 19th century, the sea trade in Kingsport declines, and fishing becomes its major industry. However, its economy declines over the next century. Early 19th century, the sea trade in Arkham fails, but now mills spring up on the banks of the Miskatonic River. Most of Ithagwa's cults in the northern regions of Earth have died out by this time. A necromantic cult exists among the people of Tempil. This cult later collapses.
Yeah, and Tempil is in England. It's a Ramsey Campbell creation.
Oh, cool. Awesome. 1800s, or 1800 exact. James Phipps, an unorthodox scientist, moves into an empty house in Riverside Alley in the town of Clotten on the Tawn River, a tributary of the Severn River. 1801, by this year, Elijah Billington lives on the family estate established by his ancestor in colonial times near Dunwich. The expurgated second edition of Thaumaturgical Prodigies in the New English canon is released. Elijah Billington protests his ancestor Robert Billington's unfavorable portrayal in Prodigies and engages in a brief and inconclusive dispute over the work with its author. The old grist mill in Dunwich is burnt down to almost nothing. 1802, Arkham industrialist Elihu Black Beckford founds the town of Aylesbury on the site of the former village of Broughton. He also has the Aylesbury Pike built. Spring James Phipps Colton one night and does not return for some time. Early November, James Phipps returns to Colton, having spent the past several months in Temp Hill. He brings with him his new wife, whom he met in that town. 1806, a larger, more modern sawmill is built by George Whatley and promises to bring economic prosperity to Dunwich. Four boys die in a tragic accident on the day of its opening, however, an act for which Avern Whatley of the Hill Whatleys is blamed. Avern is hung by an angry mob. Tragedy causes George Whatley to suffer a mental collapse, and while his family tries to run the sawmill, people are reluctant to work there. November. Lionel Phipps is born to Mr. and Mrs. James Phipps. So I guess Mrs. Phipps never gets a first name?
Yeah.
Okay. 1807, a number of bizarre disappearances and murders ending with the disappearance of Jonathan Bishop occur in the area near Kingsport, Dunwich, and Arkham. Circa 1808, after some strange happenings and conflicts with certain locals, Elijah Billington leaves with his son Laban and moves to England. Reverend Ward Phillips, perhaps in regret, tries to acquire and destroy all copies of Thaumaturgical Prodigies. 1808, the new sawmill in Dunwich finally closes. This begins the downward spiral of the Dunwich economy. 1809, an edition of De Vermeer's Mysteries, isn't that the Mysteries of the Worm?
Yep.
is published in Prague. Remnants of Lost Empires by Otto Dassmann is published in Berlin by Der Drachenhaus Press. Der Drachenhaus Press. Is that Dragonhaus?
Dragonhaus.
Cool. 1811, a mysterious foreigner leaves a copy of the Latin Necronomicon at the Bibliothèque Nationale. He is found poisoned the next day in his apartment. Wow, don't get involved with that book, apparently.
No.
That's just a bad idea. Between 1812 and 1814, during the War of 1812, the sea captains of Innsmouth turn privateer and attack the British fleet. Half of Innsmouth's soldiers are killed, and the town loses its previous prosperity. After this point, Innsmouth's economy is dependent on the mills built on the banks of the Manuet, and later Captain Obed Marsh's trade in the Indies. 1819, famous architect Charles Bulfinch is hired to help design the western wing of the Cabot Museum of Archaeology, which is dedicated to mummies after Gottfried Müller and Frederick von Jünst return from Asia. They grow apart. Frederick von Jünst writes his doctoral thesis, The Origin and Influence of Semantic Magical Texts. After graduation, he goes to the University of Wurttemberg to teach. I can't believe he graduated with a thesis like that. 1812, Captain Obed Marsh begins his business in the Pacific trade. A whaler named Scoresby observes strange mirages in the Arctic, which he later draws pictures of. 1821, Charles Leggett translates an English version of De Vermis Mysteries, Mysteries of the Worm, from a German translation. Only a few copies of this version were published. 1822, according to rumor, Lionel Phipps begins to be educated by his father in the ways of his science. 1823, Frederick von Jünst leaves his teaching post and travels through Europe, the Americas, and Africa, infiltrating and investigating numerous secret cults and learning of their practices. Late in the year, Lionel Phipps's education is rumored to be complete. Then he and his father undertake a strange series of excavations near their home. Mid-19th century, Captain Obed Marsh explores Devil's Reef. Reputedly, he is searching for pirate treasure, but I think he's building homes. 1825. Early in the year, officials searching for a fugitive in Colton search the Phipps home. One of their number has a disturbing experience in the cellar. 1831. Zadok Allen of Innsmouth is born. Zadok?
Zadok.
Zadok Allen of Innsmouth is born. 1838. Obed Marsh's trading partners in the Pacific are killed by other local tribes, ending Marsh's source of revenue. As a result, Innsmouth's economy enters a depression. Soon after, Obed Marsh founds the Esoteric Order of Dagon, which becomes very popular. 1839, the first printing of Unsprechen zu Colton is released. 1840, Obed Marsh makes contact with the Deep Ones of Yahalnathel near Devil's Reef, become part of the Esoteric Order of Dagon's rites, and also provide new gold to replace that of the Pacific Islanders. Between 1840 and 1846, the Esoteric Order of Dagon runs every other church out of town and becomes the sole religion of Innsmouth. June 24th, Ambrose Bierce is born. So that's a real happening.
That's a real happening.
And really, in 1846, on June 24th, Ambrose Bierce is born.
Yes.
Okay. 1844, May Professor Enoch Bowen ceases his excavations of Nefren Ka's tomb upon finding the shining trapezohedron and returns to Providence. Once there, he founds the Church of Starry Wisdom. 1845, M.A.G. Bridewell, a disreputable bookseller, finds a copy of the French translation of Unsprechen zu Colton in a London store. He translates it badly into English and has this rather flawed version published under the title Nameless Cults. 1846, Obed Marsh takes an unseen wife, as do other members of the Esoteric Order of Dagon. Obed Marsh and some of his followers are arrested and jailed and suspected of kidnapping and murder. 2 weeks later, a plague strikes Innsmouth. Half of the townspeople die, including courier, editor John Lawrence, and selectman Leonard Mowry. The surviving population is placed firmly under the control of Obed Marsh and the Esoteric Order of Dagon. Among the deceased is Zadok Allen's father. He takes it badly. 1859, Catskills native Joel Slater begins to exhibit bizarre behavioral patterns contrary to his normal personality.
Alien influence.
Interesting. 1860, a young priest breaks up the Kaiga worshipping cult in Freyhasgarten. Professor William Channing Webb encounters a tribe of Cthulhu-worshipping Eskimos along the western coast of Greenland. Members of the Waite family of Innsmouth move to Kettlethorpe from Kettlethorpe Farm in England. Interesting. 1861, Miskatonic Liberal Seminary, or Miskatonic College, merges with Elder Faith Seminary to become Miskatonic University. Between 1863 and 1864, Union conscription agents are sent to investigate Innsmouth's failure to meet draft quotas. After seeing the degeneracy of the town and widespread deformities among its people, they leave it unmolested. Only natives are aware that these deformities come from breeding with the Deep Ones. 1863. At this point, the Starry Wisdom cult in Providence had over 200 members. An escaped member of the cult of Glackey leaks the manuscript of the 11-volume Revelations of Glackey, which details the practices of that cult. It is published, but certain material is not included, reducing the revelations to 9 volumes. The book becomes extremely rare, as the cultists of Glackey make a point to buy as many copies as they can. Between 1865 and 1870, the cult of Glackey around its lake disappears. The lake is drained to search for the missing persons, but neither they nor any trace of Glackey or its meteor are found.
Dun, dun, dun! Dun, dun,
dun! 1873, Randolph Carter is born. 1879, in November, the Cabot Museum puts the, quote, Pacific mummy on display.
Out of eons, the guy, the priest that got petrified by Gathanathoa in season 3 or 4.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's that for that. Okay, so that was us talking about the Cthulhu mythos, what is Lovecraftian horror?
And where we're at and what we're kind of covering definitely this season.
Definitely, definitely. And yeah, some of the stuff that we've covered in the past and how it links to things mm-hmm. that we've covered in past seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sort of linking things up.
Yeah.
I like a compressed timeline because it, like, it seems to me that it can... It causes the timeline. It, like, makes the mythos more of a mythos rather than, like, just a connect. This is a series of unconnected stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. That's definitely one thing I really like about the Cthulhu mythos, is the fact that if you're a writer, you can look through the Cthulhu mythos and try and figure out, try and fill in a piece if you want, or branch off of an earlier concept, like, oh, hey, so after Joseph Kerwin married this woman or something like that, did he have any other illegitimate children? Ooh.
Yeah.
What if some child of his, like, ended up with, like, one of his spell books and decided to become, trying to make the road to ancient wizardry himself?
That's a really interesting
concept. Become a necromancer. Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, that's a freebie for everyone out there who's writing Lovecraftian horror or is a game designer for Call of Cthulhu. That one's for free.
Are there more that aren't free?
Oh, yeah, no. You know what? I'm thinking for Patreon that I am going to write some Call of Cthulhu adventures.
Ooh.
Like, about 6 a year for, like,
yeah.
I don't know, like, maybe the $10 Patreon... goal.
Uh-huh.
Maybe the $5 Patreon goal. I haven't figured that out yet. We gotta figure out Patreon.
Yeah,
we gotta sit down and talk about it.
We gotta talk about what we're gonna do for Patreon.
All right. Well,
but
hopefully.
Listen, it'll be exciting. Whatever it is we decide, it's gonna be exciting. It's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be way cool, and you're gonna be glad that you got it.
Yeah, so hopefully by episode 2, we'll have some Patreon stuff down, and hopefully a new t-shirt store down. But if you want to check out the new logo and the new t-shirt designs, go to society6.com. That's the number 6. society6.com/DB, as in D as in dog, B as in boy, Spitzer, S-P-I-T-Z-E-R, 76.
Number 76.
Number 76. And that'll do that. Or you can just go to PGTTCM and go to the merch page.
Yeah.
You go to the shop.
That'll be simple.
Find that stuff. Yeah.
Well, DB.
Yeah.
I forgot what I was going to say.
That's totally cool.
Sorry.
Hey, that sounds like a good time to end the show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, peace in the Middle East, war in the Central Core.
Keep it squiggly.
And stay weird. And we will see you with our next episode about...
Oh, I remember what I was going to ask.
What were we going to ask?
What I was going to ask is, are we going to do the same sort of thing this season that we did last season, where we have an episode and then we have a reading, or are we just going to have episode, episode, episode?
We're going to have episode, reading, episode, reading, episode, reading.
Nice.
But I'm going to be throwing in some readings here and there extra. Like, you might end up with, like, 2 episodes...
Two of us in the inbox at once?
Yeah. I mean, you might end up with, like, two readings in 1 week just because...
Or well, reading in an episode.
Or reading and an episode.
Man, it's going to be rich this season.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of cool things, a lot of cool, fun stuff.
Woohoo!
I might even get some interviews in.
Ooh,
yeah.
That'll be nice. There's so many awesome people to talk to.
Especially just in our neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I'm not going to say anyone in Portland who I am going to talk to, but I'm trying to talk to some folks in Portland about some festival stuff, about some book stuff.
We'll hype it before the episode comes out, for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, as we were saying...
War in the Central Core.
Stay squiggly, keep it weird.
Woohoo!
PGTTCM.com, DarkMythsCollective.com, and support the show. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, become part of the discussion.
It's really awesome to see all of the new downloads that are happening because of the new subscriptions.
It's
really awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Keep that up. That's great.
Yep, and help us out with the algorithm and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we come up more easily.
Yep.
Of course, we come up pretty easily anyway. But
yeah, I mean, that's if people just type in Cthulhu or horror.
People's Guide.
Lovecraft.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
Well, if they're looking for that, then they should find us. If they're not looking for that, if they're looking for, like, a cooking show,
but we want to
probably
be on the
not
top
us.
Of the list. We don't just want to be part of it. We want to crush. This is about ego. This is about ego from here. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
Oh, man.
Thanks for listening. We love you.
Yes, we do. I feel like I should be like, the announcer.
Well, there you go.
You want me to try it that way?
Oh, no.
Just
I might put it on, I may edit it so that it...
It sounds like it's a new newsreel?
It sounds like it's an old, like, or on an old telephone or something like that.
Well, that would be particularly effective once we get into the early 19th and early 20th century.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When I was a kid... When I realized that the tunnel that the BART goes through, which is the Barrier Rapid Transit in San Francisco, it goes under a tunnel under the bay.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, when I heard about that, I thought it was going to be like one of those tunnels you go through in an aquarium where you can like see the sharks swimming over you. And I was like so excited. And then we get in there and it's just like 20 minutes of nothing.
Yeah.
You know, no window, you know, like it's just dark tunnel. And... I was really disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that if any time there's a tunnel that goes along the bottom of some body of water, it should be clear and well lit so you can see what's there.
And also on that note, I wish that the light rail tunnel that goes underneath the graveyard would show the skeletons that it goes through.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, generally...
It doesn't actually go through.
Well, it does. There's a light rail tunnel in Portland that goes underneath one of the biggest graveyards in Portland. But it goes down, like, I don't know, like 60 feet. Hopefully no bodies are buried that deeply.
Thank you for ruining my joke.
I'm sorry.
I was about to explain how it doesn't actually go through bodies, but yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. That would be cool, though.
Yeah. Okay, back...
Talk about a body farm.
Back off of tangent.
Back to the mythos.
Okay,